Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the one and only Scarycast. Presenting tonight, of course, Murder 123. We've got a great story. We've got the author of the story. We've got our panelists. We've got a lot of great things happening. First of all, I want to introduce, from Emerald Isle, North Carolina, the one and only, one of the greatest wrestlers in history. Who's that? It's Papa Stro, the maestro of wrestling. How are you doing, Papa Stro?
Oh, great to be here with you all.
Oh, we're glad to have you here. Now, from Harlan, Kentucky, which is absolutely the murder capital of the world. Are you there, Tony? Tony Filosi? You better be there.
I'm here, and I'm excited to be here, and I am excited about this show.
Well, that is great, because we're really excited about it, too. And then, of course, our man in Hollywood, but he's on a special assignment in Lake Los Angeles. We'll talk about that later. Devin Tate, how are you doing tonight?
I'm great. I had a weekend away, and now I'm refreshed and, you know, getting this week off to a good start.
That's exactly right, and we're so glad to have you here. Now, Robin, who would normally be with us, she is on special assignment. They have lost an exotic cat, a $10,000 exotic cat. So I gave her a hall pass, and she is out trying to help her business partner, Gail, find that beautiful, and I've seen it. It's a beautiful, beautiful cat. They're trying to find it, so we're going to give her a pass for tonight. But anyway, it is so great to have everybody that's with us here. You guys are the best. And our guest is Darla Sailor Jackson. Darla, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
We're so glad to have you. And you're going to tell us a story, and we're going to talk about Mountain Jane Doe. You have written a book about this, right?
I did. I published a book in 2008 about this actual true account.
Okay, well, we'll get going because we're excited about Mountain Jane Doe. And I know that between Papa Stro, Devin, and Tony and me, we're going to have lots of questions. And this is going to be a lot of fun. So get going, madam. We're excited to have you here.
All right. In 1969, which happens to be the year I was actually born, a woman was found murdered on top of Pine Mountain on a place called Little Shepherd's Trail in Harlan County, Kentucky. She was found obviously murdered because she had stab wounds. She was found nude, and she was discovered by a man who was just out basically wandering in the woods. He immediately called the police, and within not very long, it was obvious that no one knew who this victim was. A search continued for several days, and after nothing turned up, eventually she was discovered June 4th, 1969, and June 8th, 1969. She was given a funeral, and she was buried as an unidentified girl. A murder investigation continued, but with really no positive leads whatsoever. So the case just grew cold. And through the years, she became more of a legend and a ghost story than anything. And then at one point,
well, now I'll tell you what, I'm going to stop you here, and I'm going to ask you a question. You said she became a ghost story. Did people ever see a ghost in that area that might have been attributed to Mountain Jane Doe?
Well, that's a good question. She was actually on Pine Mountain where she was murdered, no. But in Harlan, the city of Harlan, where she was buried, the area, which is I guess in the community called Red Dog Road, had a series of hauntings, and some were attributed to her and some were not. But in 1999-2000, my uncle moved right beside of her grave, basically, and he did attribute a ghost story to her. He claimed that he actually saw her in his home in 2000, and that's actually how I became involved in this case.
Okay. And so, and the story continues, dot, dot, dot.
Okay. My uncle, of course, became intrigued because he's just seen a ghost. And he starts doing some basic research. This was 2000. So the internet was, at that point in Harlan, and maybe everywhere, was just dial-up internet. You had to get it, like, at libraries. Very few people had it in their home. He did the research that he could, and he did he found what she looked like, and he said that the woman that he saw fit the description perfectly, which was reddish hair, fair skin, petite, not very large at all. He said that he saw this woman. He then claimed that was the only time he saw her, but he claimed that he kept getting messages or information from her. And the whole time that he lived there, and he didn't live there very long, he said that she just basically tried to communicate with him the whole time. He then turned it over to me because he knew that I actually did have internet in my home and had done a lot of research for other things like genealogy and folklore. So I began searching, and what I discovered was no one was looking for this woman. Absolutely nothing. I looked everywhere on the internet. I exhausted all searches I possibly could. So I decided to write a book about her. And what I had was a really great ghost story. So I wrote a story about her, and then I wrote about other true accounts in Harlan County, and I called it Harlan County Haunt. And through that, I was contacted by a news show who was doing mountain cold cases at the time, and they were interested in doing a piece on the story. After that was after the news story aired, a man named Todd Matthews, who is the head of NAMIS, which is the National Database for Missing and Unidentified Bodies, he contacted me, and we then began a real search, a truly official search for this woman. And our main goal, of course, was to get her exhumed, because by then, DNA was already established, and of course in 1969 it was not. So I knew, and he knew, that we desperately needed her DNA from that grave. So that we worked for years to get her exhumed, and finally we found family members, or I guess family members found us, who said that this woman could possibly be their family member. And when you have family members saying that they want her exhumed, that's when the body gets exhumed. Up until then, coroners can allow it, but when you have stakeholders like family members, that's when things really, you know, wheels really start turning as far as a body exhumation. So in November 2014, about 6 years of trying, we finally had an exhumation. And that was very tumultuous. And after we did find bones, but, and I just recently spoke about this, but I never even mentioned this. During the exhumation, I began seeing things that concerned me. like a man's part of a hardware of a man's clip tie. And I thought, this is just not, this isn't right. And sure enough, her DNA came up male. So the grave was incorrect. We had dug into the wrong grave. And that was very disheartening. In fact, that was pretty devastating. But the Harlan County Coroner's Office very quickly scheduled another exhumation. And after the winter, when weather started improving, they dug up the correct grave. And at that point, it was sent to the University of Texas. The bones were, the DNA was extracted from them. And it was a female, and there was one family that came up 99.9% positive match. And it was the family who insisted that this was their family member. And at that point, we learn of this woman's identity. It actually took 2 years. That's how long. So in 2016 was when she was finally positively ID'd. There's a waiting list for DNA court, Jane Doe's, John Doe's, and missing people whose relatives put their name in this database. It's by the tens of thousands do this. So it took about 18 months from the correct exhumation. And we learned that this young woman was Sonia K. Blair Adams from Letcher County, Kentucky, which is right by Harlan County. And she had a daughter, and that her daughter and granddaughter were the ones that searched the database and said, yes, this is our mom, this is our grandmother. And that is how it, that's basically how the whole case came to be. We still do not have, we don't have the murderer. That is still a mystery, but her identity is solved.
But I mean, that's a magnificent achievement that you at least know who died. And
you know, that was my goal. That was the goal. It was never the murderer. It was just to give this woman back her name.
Well, that was a big deal. All right, now before our panel starts asking questions, I have a burning question for you.
Okay.
The most famous ghost of all time in South Carolina is Alice Flagg.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I actually, for like 11 years, I have owned the name AliceFlagg.com. I think Alice is a wonderful lady. She died a long, long time ago. And there are only two of us, me and a friend of mine named Jay Bolts. He's an attorney. We're the only two people that really know a lot of the history about Alice Flagg. And your expertise, you've got the correct expertise. You're the first person I have spoken with ever. It seems like they would know how to approach this. We need to go to the two grave sites. I need to get you there. And we need to find out, where is Alice buried?
Mm-hmm.
If I, after this show, may I please call you? And could we talk about, because what I want, now when we do this, I am going to have Tony Filosi. I'm going to have Papa Stroh there. We are going to fly Devin out here, and we're going to have Robin out there. And we're going to have the whole Scary Cast crew. But would you be interested in talking about the investigation of Alice Flagg?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Sure.
She is the most romantic ghost in the world. She fell in love with a lumberjack, her brother, who was actually at that point in time the richest man in the world, did not want that to happen. And we need to find out. We need to talk to Alice. And I mean, I think Robin and Tony, and we might even get our boy Shane Aulis down here. We might want to talk to Alice and find out what is going on. There are actually 7 Alice flags who have been buried. You see, that's the problem. This is a bit of intrigue.
Wow.
And
yeah.
And if we do this, we have to have Papa Stroh. Would you be interested in coming down and helping us? Hello? Papa Stroh. He'll be back with us, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
We want you there. Devin, if we got you a plane ticket from Los Angeles over here to Myrtle Beach, would you come out with us and try to find Alice Flagg?
I'd love to. That sounds amazing.
It would be probably the most incredible ghost story find in history if we did it. Tony, you
yes.
got a car, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
All right, and I can guarantee you that Robin and her husband, Pat, who are both clairvoyants, and they would do that, and I would be there, and we would be there at midnight, because that's when you have to be. Actually, you have to be there at 2 different times. You have to be there at midnight, then you also have to be there at 2 in the afternoon on Sunday. Strange things happen at All Saints Church Cemetery. They really do, and I've been there and I've experienced it, and so we have to be there twice. And I think it's going to be interesting. But you know, Darla, this is an incredible story. It really is. So tell us, and then I'm going to just ask, it's going to be a free for all with our great panel. I want our panel to just ask you questions about how did you do this? So give us the quick story on how you went into the story of Mountain Jane Doe. How did you go about finding out who she was? I mean, I know you told us a little bit, but there's more to it than that. And then I'd like for our panelists to ask you some questions. So give us the quick, not necessarily the quick, but give us the down and dirty about how you really went about doing this, because you had a family to deal with. You had a lot of people to go through, correct?
Yes. Well, you know, I had always heard of this case as a child, so I was not completely unfamiliar with it, but I had no specifics. When my Uncle James contacted me, he basically had a ghost story. But what I quickly learned when I started, I had to transition from a ghost story to fact. When I started really wanting to figure out her identity and solve this mystery, I felt like time was always working against me, because I know that in a grave, there is a body's decomposed constantly. And there are many times when there is nothing found in a grave. So I tried to work as quickly as possible. And my first means was just getting attention, and that was the book and contacting news shows and things like that. At that point, I did not feel like I was qualified to do it, but I knew that there were others, if they got the attention, they were qualified. So that was the first thing, was to just speak loudly and try to get attention, and I did. And I lucked up, because I got probably the top in the field. The first person to contact me was Todd Matthews, the head of the National Missing and Identified Person Database. He is basically the one who manages that. At that point, we finally found the case in Frankfort, Kentucky. That's the capital of Kentucky. There had been some very basic dental records and just some very basic information about this woman who had it had made its way to Frankfort, but was long forgotten. This was truly a cold case. We use the term cold case loosely now, but what it means is nothing active for decades, and no one actively pursuing a case. And it was a true cold case. With the basic information that was given, it was already entered into a database in 2009. At that point, it actually caught the radar then of this woman's family. The daughter of the victim called the Kentucky State Police and asked about this woman, and she said, "I think I am the daughter of this woman." And she was told that the woman was far too young to have had children. The woman was a teenage mother, so she was not too young. She was young and averaged for a mother, but she was definitely old enough to have a child, and she had, very young. At that point, we then started trying to get approval to have the body exhumed. And you usually need a coroner's signing off, a judge's signing off, and the state police, if possible. It can fall just on the coroner, though, if there is good reason. For years, we really didn't have good reason. So Todd Matthews talks to two families, and he tells them that it doesn't pack as much power if two investigators go and ask to be exhumed, but when family members ask, then it's almost definite, and it was. So in 2013, two families approached the Kentucky State Police that was their mother. And in 2014, the first exhumation happened. In 2015, the correct body was discovered and DNA extracted. And then at that point, it was just a matter of science. But you do have to go through several steps. I'm a funeral director. I'm a licensed funeral director. I own a funeral home. So I already had the advantage of knowing what you need to do to get a body exhumed. At one point when I started this, my husband was deputy coroner for Harlan County. He passed away in 2010. And at that point, I took over the funeral home. And so I already knew what was going to be involved in all this. So that really helped. That I was definitely at an advantage.
Wow. I mean, I had no idea that you were also a funeral director. Actually, so that you know, I have taken all the funeral director courses here in South Carolina and at Lander University, and this is kind of interesting. There's a lot to be involved with getting things like this done. Now I am going to turn to our seasoned panel. The first person I'm going to talk to is Devin, and then we're going to talk to Papa Stroh, and then we're going to talk to Tony. So now, and Devin, I'm going to start my conversation with you as follows. You've got one of the most famous places in the world where, you know, you got the La Brea Tar Pits. And it's not a weird correlation. The La Brea Tar Pits are where all of the dinosaurs and everything were, they were found. And I know, number one, my first quick question is, that is a famous place in Los Angeles, right?
Yes, it's just down the street from me.
No way. That is so cool. And you know, when you're looking for evidence, I guess we could say. So tell us a little. Do you mind telling us a little bit about the La Brea Tar Pits? Because you live there, if you don't mind, kind sir.
Well, I do live here. Unfortunately, I've actually never been inside. I went there on my first visit to L.A. My dad took me and my brother and my mom there, and we walked around the outside, and we went into the free part of the building, which was like the gift shop. But my dad was too cheap to pay for us to go in. So, and then once I've lived here, it's kind of one of those things. It's like a tourist thing, you know. So I haven't actually gone there, but I have been by it, and you can definitely smell it. You can smell the tar. So it is an ancient, you know, it's an ancient site where there's, you know, like the name says, tar pits, and they have found many different dinosaur bones there before. So I really should go check it out. It's next door to the L.A. County Museum of Art, which I have been to many times, and you can have a pretty good view of the tar pits from the museum, but I've never actually been in the tar pits.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, and that's really kind of cool. I'll tell you what, when I do my next trip out to Los Angeles, we are going, I will pay for us to go to the La Brea Tar Pits. we've got to do this because it's truly a monumental spot in the United States. I think it's as big as the Salem, Massachusetts, you know, and the witch trials and those, you know, those places and everything. So, I mean, I think it's very important. We need to go to it and we need to see it. But when you go to places like that, you know, certainly you get some very strange feelings. And Darla, did you go up to the area where the body was found?
You know, I did. I have, I visited it several times. It wasn't beneficial to me in my investigation as far as finding evidence, but it gave me a feel for where this body was dumped. And what I learned was whoever dumped her there truly thought she would never be found. That was their goal. Never imagined anyone would ever find her there. The place I visited most strangely was her grave and where my uncle used to live. I would visit there many, many times. And it seemed like I got more insight there than anywhere else, or it could have been more of just a, if I was ever feeling disheartened or feeling like giving up, this took 16 and a half years. For me to find, so many, many times I felt like giving up. I felt like it was hopeless. But after a visit to her grave and just to look at the little marker that said unidentified body, you know, that would give me the incentive to just keep on going. And one of the things that I didn't mention was after I wrote the book, the gravesite started being a somewhat of a tourist attraction. So I removed the gravestone and I kept it with me. And because I have a funeral home, I was able to just make one there at my funeral home. I made a replacement for it and I put it in the ground. And that really is what happened originally, probably many years ago. That's why the wrong grave was dug up in the first place. It was one of those little picks that you stick in the ground. Someone had probably pulled it up, mowed, and then accidentally poked it back down in the wrong place. But it back to your question, I did visit where she was dumped, but I visited more where she really was. That was kind of my go-to place through the years, was her grave.
Okay. Well, thank you. All right, Papa Stroh, this has been an interesting talk about this. Do you have any comments or questions that you would like to pose to Darla? I think he's having the same problems that I was having earlier. We'll get back to him. Tony, what kind of questions do you have?
Wait,
Papa Stroh's back. You know what?
No, you're having
the same problem. You're having the same problems that I was having. It's like you're talking, and then all of a sudden it just blurs out, and there you are. Yes, sir. Yes, sir, Papa Stroh.
Sorry.
That's fine.
Darla, when investigating all this, like you said, there was a point in time where you felt like, you know, given up, and then you talked about finding inspiration to deepen the search deeper into the situation. I mean, along with what you said, what was like, was there other factors that you experienced that led to your, you know, like your final conclusions on the investigation, as far as did any other like a strange occurrences happen the further you investigated? Were like some stuff that you found out that you didn't really know before, more or less?
Well, yes, it was actually from beginning to end. This was just the strangest investigation, and nothing was ever easy about this case, and nothing was ever normal. Any turn that I took, and with things that I had found an answer, there was always something that kind of threw me for a loop, and I realized that things were just not as they appeared. What besides her grave not being in basically the right place, the place I visited, it was the neighboring grave. You know, my uncle had always said that he had been told by just her, basically, that there was a threesome involved, and that she was part of a love triangle. And I had heard things. There had been so many rumors started about this murder. I have heard she was from Chicago. I have heard just really unbelievable stuff. My uncle said there was a lover's triangle, and one of the strangest things that I discovered from her daughter, after the body was identified as Sonia, which was, by the way, probably 20 minutes from where her body was found, and there was never a missing persons report filed for her at all. No one from Letcher County, from her home, came looking for her. I discovered that this young woman was married to a man, left him for his brother, and became pregnant by his brother. At one point, her daughter did not know really who her father was. And adoption papers say one thing, and the birth certificate says another thing. So one of the weirdest things, the strangest thing, was my Uncle James, who's now deceased as well. He passed away in 2013. One of the first things he said was, "I keep feeling like this is a love triangle." Well, it most definitely was. And that really adds to the mystery of the whole thing. I can't point out suspects, but brothers would be prime suspect one and two, obviously. Brother one was has military records showing that he was in Vietnam. Brother two died the day after her Mountain Jane Doe's identity was solved. He fell over dead with a heart attack.
Wow.
So he was never able to be questioned or anything like that. That was probably the weirdest thing. The weirdest thing was my uncle, who had never, he never believed in anything. He just thought ESP, psychics, ghosts, all that were ridiculous, and then suddenly he's telling me he's seeing ghosts and giving me information that a ghost is telling him. And there was some wrong information, but that was definitely some right information.
Wow. So So it's the more you investigated to find answers, you just had more questions as you went along.
The investigation just created more and more questions, and still does. There's still a lot of unanswered questions here. One of the unanswered questions is, why did the grandparents of the baby of the missing woman, why did they file for adoption before this woman's body was ever found? 3 weeks before the body was discovered, her grandparents were already trying to adopt her.
Wow.
She was an infant at the time. Just very, very peculiar circumstances all around.
Mm-hmm.
Golly. That is a little bit of a mess there. It really is. Bob Stroh, that's a good thing to have brought up. I mean, this is a mess.
It was a mess from the beginning. Her mother never had a child by the same father. She had 11, 12 siblings. The mother would always give her children to a family member, whether it be one of her sisters or something. These were children that were kind of lost along the way. They never had any sort of sense of belonging to a family. And I think that this young girl at age 16, 17, just simply attached herself to the wrong family. And she wasn't ready to settle down. She wasn't ready to be a mother. She was a young girl. She was wanting to get out in the world, and that is what she started doing. And just as soon as she started doing that, someone brutally murdered her, stabbed her, beat her, because her front teeth were found in her throat. So she was brutally beaten before she was killed. This was a hate crime. Someone hated her.
Wow.
And unfortunately, her daughter doesn't know anything about her mother. And I had so many questions to ask her daughter, and she has no answers either. She wants the answers just as bad as I do. This woman, even though badly decomposed, she had probably been dead about 3 weeks before she was discovered. She had severe burn scars all over her legs. That was one thing that the autopsy did reveal, was major scarring. She had to have been in a horrible fire, and no one knows anything about this fire at all. They have no information. The family members that are still alive, which there are quite a few, she had lots of brothers and sisters, and they're alive. And they said they had no idea how she had gotten so severely injured. So just so much mystery surrounds this.
Yep. Sounds like we need to have Robin here and see if she could help perceive, what might have happened to her. Because anyway, we'll see. We'll see. That will be a talk for another time. But this is just absolutely horrible. We're just so glad that you have brought it to this point that we have an idea of what happened. We really do. And now, Tony, what kind of question?
Yes.
What question do you have?
Well, Darla, let's go back to Brother One and Brother Two. Was Brother One the original, her husband that was in Vietnam, or was that Brother Two?
Brother One has his military papers saying he was in Vietnam at the time of her death.
Right. Was that the one she was married to, or the one she had the affair with?
That was the one she was married to.
Okay. So brother two was here, you know, in the Letcher Harlan area.
Yes.
Whenever that Jane Doe was murdered.
Yes.
And she was pregnant with his child. Was there any records that she had an abortion, a miscarriage, or was she pregnant whenever they found the body?
No, she had given birth. She had already given birth to an infant at that
from
time.
From brother two.
That's what they say. The adoption papers say brother one is the father. The birth certificate says brother two is the father.
And that
the woman has
then.
No idea. Yes, that's the daughter.
Okay, the daughter that you spoke with, she doesn't really know whether it's
she
okay.
She does not
okay,
really
okay.
know. Mm-mm. No. And,
and
she says the family would fluctuate back and forth as to who her father was. She was raised by her father's family.
Now,
her father's parents adopted her.
Now, you said that there was about a 3 week that they were already trying. The grandparents were already trying to adopt the child before the body was found.
Yes, May 8th, they were trying to. They already said they were filing for adoption because the mother had abandoned her. That is approximately, according to coroner's reports and autopsy reports, about the time she was murdered, about 3 weeks before the body was found.
So about a day or two after she was murdered, so they started the adoption process.
Yes.
In theory, you know.
In theory.
Okay, now that is the... that's brother two's, one and two's mom and dad, right?
Correct.
Okay. Now, and in that time frame, nobody looked for her. Is that correct?
No. No missing person report. She was living in the home with the grandparents that filed for adoption. They never filed for anything. No, they just filed for adoption. No missing persons. They never reported this.
Now, were both grandparents alive at the time, the grandfather and the grandmother?
Yes.
Yes,
both were alive.
I know for sure the grandmother was, but was the grandfather alive?
Yes.
He was?
He was.
Well,
he did
the,
not live. He didn't live long, but he was alive then.
Okay. You know, I'm just spitballing, but you know, like you said, the Jane Doe had her teeth knocked out, you know, and they were lodged in her throat. So somebody, like you said, somebody disliked her very much to brutally beat her and stab her like that.
Yes.
And I guess the body was too decomposed to tell if there had been a sexual assault.
It was not, not to be graphic, but her upper body decomposed much faster than her lower body. And it was determined that she had been sexually assaulted.
So, So my theory, I mean, and everybody's dead, and the brother too dropped dead the day after that. The true identity of Jane Doe came out. So my thoughts are that either the grandfather or brother two did it, because and I think the family had knowledge of it, because why else would you have a child in your care? Mommy goes missing. You don't file a missing persons report. You start adoption proceedings. Now, it could have been, now, whenever she was murdered, like I say, her husband was in Vietnam. So they were, it's either the brother, you know, but see, he's going to know that, I mean, if he'd been in Vietnam, I mean, how did they cover up the fact that there was a child? If you pulled a tour, I would imagine a tour would be about 9 months to a year. So, you know, I'm trying to fit the pieces together. I think that either the grandfather or the brother, or brother two did it, you know, just spitballing again. Nobody files a missing persons report. They tie up a loose end. They, you know, somebody sexually assaults her, brutally beats her, and stabs her to death and dumps her where she doesn't, they don't think that she'll be found. So I'm just trying to get my head right. That's very interesting facts. Very interesting facts.
One thing, there's always, this is never easy. There's always something. The daughter says that husband, brother one, claims he was in Vietnam. She says he came home from Vietnam prior to what his discharge papers say.
And he could have been on leave and found out all
yes.
of it.
She says he was in fact in Kentucky, but he has military proof, so he's not even a suspect.
Right.
So that is one thing that the family members say, that they do recall him being actually in Letcher County at the time of the murder. Although
see,
he's
that,
very quick to say that he was in Vietnam.
Well, you know, the military would if we could get a hold of his, and his daughter could get a hold of his, what is it, 214, DV-214?
Yes.
And that would give, well, that's a discharge. She could get a hold of his service records also, right?
As far as I know, yes. I think so. I left that a lot of that up to her. But, yeah, I think we can do that.
But see where I'm going with that?
I think so. Yeah.
See, if we could prove that he was in on leave during that time, and it may be something that the family doesn't want to dig, no pun intended, to dig up, you know, they've had a healing process. It's phenomenal what you've accomplished with this, you know, and giving them closure, and they may not want to reopen that wound, but I would like to know. I would like to see his service records and see when he was in on leave, because that'll be, you know, he was on leave from July 13th to July 23rd, then he returned to Vietnam. And if he was on leave during that time and he came in and found out that she had had a child by the brother, then, you know, he's going to go into a... I think it's a family thing. I think somebody in the family, from the information that you've given us, I think somebody in the family murdered her. I don't think it was a random... they picked her up hitchhiking and done all that. And the reason that I say that is there was no missing persons report. And I know the jealousy and all that with the two brothers could definitely come into play. But it sounds like to me somebody was tying loose ends together, maybe trying to keep the family. But see here, you know, if he came in on leave while the affair was going on, then they could have passed the child off as his. Maybe they were tying up loose ends, but definitely Mama and Papa knew who killed. I think they knew who killed Sonya?
Karen, who is the daughter of Sonya, she claims that her grandfather died about 5 or 6 years after the murder and after she was adopted. So she doesn't have a whole lot of memory about him. She was just 5 or 6 years old. But she claims that her grandmother, at times while she was growing up, if she wasn't acting correctly or what she considered dressing appropriately, she would say, you are acting like a whore, and you are going to end up just like your mother on top of Pine Mountain.
Whoa.
That was what she was threatened with as a child.
See, that's very telling. And, you know, that's interesting. And, you know, we work on a lot of other stuff. So, I mean, if you want to maybe make contact with the daughter and see if she wants, you know, because that would be a real big piece of evidence, would be those service records. That would be a really great start. And see, little insights like that. So I'm thinking Mamaw's guilty as shit. Excuse my language. She knew about it. She may not have participated in the assault and the stabbing, but she definitely knew about it, because if she did, within 24 hours of Mom not showing back up, if she was the least bit concerned about Mom, they're going to file a missing person report.
Yep.
Right.
So
they were not the least bit concerned about that young girl. She was causing dissension in the family. She was causing a huge amount of drama. Yeah,
they wanted rid of her. Right, exactly. That's where I'm going with it. They wanted rid of her.
And Karen, who is the daughter, she lives in Virginia, very near here, very, very near Harlan. She says, yes, she is happy that her mother's identity was solved, but it's not over until the person who is responsible for her mother's death sees justice. She said, she says that whoever did it absolutely robbed her of any kind of functional childhood, and that they deserve to be punished. She says her mother was extremely young girl, a teenager. She was at that point maybe 19 years old, 20, I'm thinking, and she was robbed of her life. And Karen was robbed of a mother, and she definitely wants justice. I wanted Sonya's identity found. Karen wants the murderer found.
Well, it's up to you. I mean, it's your ball game. I mean, if you want to do it, I'd love to help you. And I think that would be the place to start, is having the daughter get the military records so we could timeline that.
Yeah.
And then kind of go from there, you know. But that's really telling about the grandmother, you know, what she said to the granddaughter about ending up on Pine Mountain like her mom.
Yes. Yes.
You'll be a whore like your and it's like,
yes.
Oh my God.
And one thing we found, that we found a common thread on the show, we talk about a lot of serial killers, is that in certain instances the family members know but look the other way. Or that's what we think from the evidence presented. You know, like with the first one comes to mind, Jeffrey Dahmer, dismembering bodies in his grandmother's house and her shed, tools or garage. You know,
in
like,
Meemaw's house, as you put it, and that was the most frightening thing I've ever heard. In Meemaw's house. Oh, my God.
In Mamaw's house. You know, so, you know, she would have to go in and clean the room. I mean, you know, she would pick up after him. And if there was a smaller house, there was just one bathroom for sure and surface, you know. And even if there were two bathrooms and he tried to do away with the blood and things like that, it's just impossible I think to do away with all the blood, all the body parts, all the, without somebody knowing, because I think he killed, what was it, guys, 3 or 4 people while he lived with his grandmother?
Yep.
I'm thinking he killed 4.
I'm thinking four.
I'm doing my my senior dissertation on serial killers and cults. Jeffrey Dahmer.
Imagine that.
Yeah, but yeah, who would have thunk it? But the psychology of this is, you know, Mamaw was aware of it. Mental illness runs in families. Mamaw could have been a little nutty. She could have been
so
special.
So was the dad.
Mother. Yeah.
The mother was committed twice. Maybe Dahmer's mother was committed twice.
Yes.
I think.
He was. Mental illness ran on both sides of his family. And mm-hmm. also, when things like this happen, people don't want to deal with the aftermath. They'd rather cover stuff up.
And then the thing with the box.
Deal with all that.
You remember the story about the box, the dad in the box, and the stinky box? And it's like, open it, Jeffrey. No, Dad. What's in the box, Jeffrey? Nothing but a mummified head and some genitals, Dad. You know, just don't bother me.
they were all.
And I don't mean to make
crazy.
Light of it, but.
No,
but that,
they were.
He had to know.
Oh, yeah. No, they all knew. They all knew. And even though they were all mentally ill, they didn't necessarily approve. But when it's something like that in a home, they don't want to deal with it. They will absolutely help cover up.
And I think Sandra's grandmother fits that bill.
Yeah, she did not want either one of her sons or both affected by this. And so she diminished this woman to you know, nothing, you know, worthy of what happened to her.
Right. They had to dehumanize her before they could really kill her and dump her.
Yes. Most definitely.
God. I'm sorry. I'm just sitting here saying how horrible all this is. Terrible. This is a true murder 1-2-3. It really is. So I tell you what, Darla, you're working on a senior dissertation about this?
I am. Serial killers, and cults.
Well, when you get done with it, approximately when do you think you'll be finished?
I'm halfway finished now.
Okay, so you think maybe within a couple of months, within a month or two or three?
Sure. Absolutely.
Well, then we got to get a copy of it, and everybody's got to get to read it. Devin, Papa Stroh, Robin, and Tony, and me, and we're gonna have a field day with this thing. Okay.
Okay.
I don't know how to say it in a. In an interesting way, we'll talk a lot about it. So I don't want to say we're going to have a field day on it. Okay, yeah, we'll not say that, folks. But anyway, I tell you what, this has been just amazing. It's just an amazing conversation with you, and we want to have you back when you get this done. Let Tony know, and we'll get you back. And.
Okay.
And so this is great. Now, Papa Stroh, I got to grab you here for a minute, because if anyone is listening on Friday night, they're getting ready to, and they cannot miss the following. What can they not miss this Friday night at midnight?
Oh, the Stroh Zone returns this Friday night at midnight Eastern Standard Time on my official Facebook page, facebook.com/StrohTheMaestro. And this Friday night's feature will be The Brain That Wouldn't Die. So be sure to tune in.
Oh, my God, I love that film. I have seen that several times. It's incredible. There's this lady who's like, you know, she's sitting there in this tray, and It's incredible. Is that right, Papa Stroh? She's just sitting there in that tray.
That's the one, yeah.
Oh my goodness. It's a great show. So everybody, now if you're listening to us on Friday night, just go right over to Stroh the Maestro, Facebook, Stroh the Maestro, and listen and watch this great, great horror film. And it's an incredible horror film, and I know you'll enjoy it. And Darla, we will we will have you back when you get your dissertation finished. And Devin, we're going to ask you. I'm going to ask you if you'll go over there to the La Brea Tar Pits. We'll pay for you. You and your better half to get in there. We got to have some pictures from the La Brea Tar Pit. So we got a lot of great things that have come out of this absolutely wonderful, wonderful show. And Tony, thanks for bringing for bringing Dollar here with us.
I have one more question, John. Really quick.
Yes, sir.
One more question for Darla. Darla,
mm-hmm.
where can people purchase your book? If they want to know more about Mountain Jane Doe and your other works, how can they find out more about them? Where can they purchase them?
My books, Harlan County Haunts, More Harlan County Haunts, and Mountain Murders, can all be found on Amazon and at lulu.com, L-U-L-U.com. And all you have to do is search my name, Darla Saylor, S-A-Y-L-O-R, Jackson.
That's great. And I tell you what, Darla, we have a show every Friday morning. It's called Visit Mount Mitchell Podcast. And we've had a fellow that talked about a lot of murders and deaths thanks to the Prohibition. So I would like to call you sometime soon and get you on the Visit Mount Mitchell Podcast. I think it would be great. People will really enjoy what you've got. Would you like for me to give you a call on that one?
Absolutely.
Well, that's great. And Tony, thanks for bringing Darla here with us. And Devin, thanks for being our man in Hollywood. And we've just been having a great time. Papa Stroh, thanks for being our man in Emerald Isle. And we've just been having a blast here on the one and only I'm sorry, God, I have lost my mind on the one and only Scary Cast, better known as Murder 123 Tonight. So thanks a lot. We'll see you next week, and we appreciate you being here. And everybody say goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Take care.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Okay, take care. End episode, and the British lady will be back. Come on, British lady. Okay, take care. Bye. It's like I got too damn many shows. Okay. Thank you, kind sir. It was fun. Thank you, buddy.
Hello, how you doing, sir?
I'll tell you what, that girl was kind of... back by Hello.
Hello.
Good. You hear me now? How are you? Anyway, thank you very much. That was actually kind of a. It's kind of. Look, you know.
Yeah.
It was, and absolutely, what I want to do is I want to get her down here and tone you. And the whole I want to, and Devin I'll pay $200. I think it'd be a fun show to do over at All Saints Church and all that stuff. But anyway, so you're doing good. You're doing all right. So this is just bad. You be good. I'll see you tomorrow. Call you tomorrow. Okay. Call you tomorrow. Bye.
Hello. Perfectly. How are you? Yeah, well, anyway, thanks. It was a good show, and I'm looking forward to seeing you Thursday, and is your mom doing, excuse me, is your mom doing okay? I'm